The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try to silence our voices. They'll pretend to be patriots, fighting for fairness for all. But they're not even fit to hold office. What they believe doesn't fit with freedom at all. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong.
America back. That's right. We have to take America back, and that's why we do things like we do. Why we do shows like this, the National Intel Report on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm coming to you from the heart of Pennsylvania, the birthplace of American liberty, the state of independence. I'm Peter Serafin. I'm your Thursday host here on the National Intel Report, live on Republic Broadcasting Network, Liberty Lighthouse, heard elsewhere like Mojo Radio. And I'm here to remind you that free speech is not free, and that free speech platforms like this one, well, they need your support. You can support them by hitting that donate button on their website, or you can, you know, support their sponsors, buy from their sponsors, use their promo codes, those kinds of things. It helps a lot. Helps keep free speech going. Well, tonight, we've got two guests coming into the show. I've got, Brent Hamacek is coming on. He's from Human Events. He's going to come on about a half an hour from now, right around 6:30. Then at 7 o'clock, we've got David Sumrall from StopHate.com, the big January 6th prisoner, political prisoner advocate. Those two guys are going to both come on and give us a little update about what's going on in their worlds, in their organizations. But I wanted to talk about something that I haven't talked about in a little while, and that is, the Nuremberg Code. I talked about it probably 2 years ago, right at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. I talked about the Nuremberg Code, and I basically said that what they were trying to do was illegal. So I want to go through the Nuremberg Code tonight. Before we get to our first guest. So bear with me. What was the Nuremberg Code? Nuremberg Code was from the Nuremberg trials after World War II. The Nuremberg Code that was developed was 10 rules. 10 rules for human experimentation. So these were rules that were set forth by international judges in an international court. So after they heard all the cases and heard both sides of the pro-human experimentation and anti-human experimentation, these judges came together, and their statement right before they give, the paragraph right before they give the 10 rules, is the great weight of evidence before us is to affect that certain types of medical experiments on human beings, when kept within reasonably well-defined bounds, conform to the ethics of the medical profession generally. The protagonists of the practice of human experimentation justify their views on the basis that such experiments yield results for the good of society that are unprocurable by any other method or means of study. All agree, however, that certain basic principles must be observed in order to satisfy moral, ethical, and legal concepts. Okay? That all clear? I thought it was pretty clear. That's the statement of the judges at the start of the Nuremberg Code. They admit human experimentation is very valuable. It's kind of ugly, risky, scary, and there should be rules around it. So these judges came together and they came up with 10 rules that all medical experiments on human beings are supposed to follow. Now, if you want to call in and join the program, join this conversation, you can do that by calling 512-248-8252 or toll-free 313-9443. You can also join the conversation in the video chats if you happen to be watching in video format on YouTube, Facebook, Rumble, Twitch, DLive, Twitter, all over the place. You can put your comments right there in the chat, and I can see those. I got Mark. Hi, Mark. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Lance. Three of my friends that showed up to watch the video. Now, starting with rule number one of the Nuremberg Code. Rule number one is rather lengthy. It's basically broken down. Well, there's a statement, and then there's two lengthy paragraphs that kind of go into that statement. So the statement is, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. The voluntary consent. Then under that, it says, this means that the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent, should be so situated as to be able to exercise free power of choice without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, or other ulterior form of consent or coercion, and should have sufficient knowledge and comprehension of the elements of the subject matter involved as to enable him to make an understanding and enlightened decision. This latter element requires that before the acceptance of an affirmative decision by the experimental subject, there should be made known to him the nature, duration, and purpose of the experiment, the method and means by which it is to be conducted, all conveniences and hazards reasonably to be expected, and the effects upon his health or person which may possibly come from his participation in this experiment. Now, that's a pretty lengthy paragraph that basically says that, yes, you need the voluntary consent of the subject that you're going to be experimenting on. That subject should be well-informed. They need to be well-informed in potential side effects. They need to be well-informed as to what is the experiment about. What are you testing? How long is the experiment going to be? And all of this has to be done without fraud, force, deceit, duress, overreaching, or other ulterior form of constraint or coercion. Now, before I move on, now let's delay that. the last paragraph in item number one. This is all still rule number one of the Nuremberg Code. The final paragraph, the duty and responsibility for ascertaining the quality of the consent rests upon each individual who initiates, directs, or engages in the experiment. It is a personal duty and responsibility which may not be delegated to another with impunity. Okay. So whoever's doing the experiment, it is their responsibility to make sure that informed consent is achieved without coercion or duress or all the other things I already said. So what does this mean? Well, apparently in these United States, it doesn't mean much of anything when it comes to an experimental vaccine for COVID-19. See, none of the COVID-19 vaccines here in the United States have ever been approved thus far. So far, every vaccine, mRNA jab, clot shot, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. Whatever you want to call that thing, they are all under emergency use authorization only. Now, what does that mean? Well, emergency use authorization authorizes the emergency use of an experimental drug or treatment. So by definition, all of those mRNA products are experimental. Otherwise, they would either be approved or not approved. They're experimental because they use the emergency use authorization. So if they're experimental, then the Nuremberg Code applies, right? Common sense, it's logic. It's what I try to do. I try to bring common sense and logic to whatever subject we're discussing. So, was the mRNA rollout, jab rollout, was it free of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, ulterior constraints, or coercion? Absolutely not. People were forced and or bribed. You know, you remember we had companies that, well, you could get a free donut at Krispy Kreme, or you could get a free French fry at, I don't know, Five Guys or whatever. I don't remember what company it was. But you also had the, you have to do this or be fired. Both of those things, whether it's a, hey, get this free donut, or it's get this or lose your job, both of those things are coercion. That's a violation of rule number one of the Nuremberg Code. But rule number one also says, spelled out, that in order to make informed consent, voluntary consent, that you, as the person being experimented upon, well, you have to be known or made known of the duration and purpose of the experiment, the methods and means that which will be conducted, and all inconveniences and hazards reasonably to be expected. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the jab rolled out without the little insert in the packaging that lists all the reasonably to be expected side effects? So again, violation of rule number one of the Nuremberg Code. Why? How? We the people allowed this to happen. Now, half of us were so afraid and so scared that, oh, they have a jab, let's go get it. There's a pretty small percentage of us that immediately stood up and said, This is illegal. This is a violation of international standards. No, you shouldn't do this. Nobody should do this. This is scary. This is dangerous. But those of us that did that, well, we were shunned. We were silenced. We were mocked. We were ridiculed. I just read rule number one. And our government and the companies that produce those shots violated rule number one in multiple ways. Clearly violated rule number one in multiple ways. But I'm getting way too serious already, so let's take a quick comedy break. Be back in about 60 seconds.
I'm Peter Serafine with Serafine Hancock & Associates with a request from your local bar association. If you took the COVID-19 vaccine in 2020 or 2021 and suffered serious side effects, or if your loved one got the vaccine and then died, please stop calling attorneys. Your attorney can't help. You voluntarily took a vaccine under an emergency use authorization, which by definition is an experimental vaccine with absolutely no study of long-term side effects. Your fear drove you to make that decision without research. You accepted the risk and waived your right to sue. As much as your local law office would love to take your money and go after Big Pharma, we can't help you. Please stop calling. You're only wasting your time and ours. Serafine Hancock & Associates is not a real law firm, but you did take an experimental vaccine without any long-term studies. Good luck.
Mojo 50.
Jump back in. Comment from one of the video from the Facebook video stream. Sarah Nichols says, please share out the video on social media. Tell your friends and family about Republic Broadcasting Network. It's highly important to support free speech networks. And that is absolutely right. Thank you very much, Sarah. And with that, before we move on to rule number two, we got Glenn in Philadelphia on line one. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Yes, good evening, Peter.
Good evening, sir.
Take a minute there to turn off my Bluetooth. Hi. First, one brief aside I wanted to mention. Your last name, Serafine, apparently ends in the letter N. If it ended in the letter M, it would be like the Hebrew plural of the word seraph, which is a type of angel. You know, we've all heard of seraphim and seraphs. So apparently there's something angelic about your background. Just that I mentioned that.
Well, before you move on, my name is Peter, after St. Peter. Angelo, the Italian word for angel. Serafine, derivative of seraphim, as you just said. So yeah. I've always thought about it as I'm going to hell because there's absolutely no way I can possibly live up to my name.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about believing in Jesus. That's a given, an assumption that we're not good enough. So you receive Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, and you don't have to be good enough. You have to hear and respond.
So, yep, it's just my humor, though.
Yeah. Now, the other reason I called, since you're starting to talk about the Nuremberg rules and all the research stuff, I just wanted to raise the obvious gimme on this whole topic.
The
big one that popped into my mind was the Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis in black males. Went from 1932, which would have been before Nuremberg, to 1972, which is well after Nuremberg. So the U.S. was already very much embroiled in this. People get a little confused sometimes because of the name of the city, Tuskegee, and they will have heard of the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II, which is, a black...
Like flyers,
aviators, and fighter pilots. Yeah, so that was depicted in the movie Red Tails. I believe is a good one to look at that. So you don't want to muddy the waters about this Tuskegee Airmen versus the Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis in black males, which was highly ethical with or without Nuremberg, as far as I'm concerned, and And plus, there have been numerous studies where the GIs were enlisted. People have been used. I mean, when detonating the atomic bombs in the desert and having them be subjected to the radiation and then checking the health effects. There's all sorts of things where the United States has failed to behave in an ethical and principled manner with such things.
I agree, especially when it comes to the military, because when you join the military, you sign so many papers, it's disgusting. And you basically sign over all of your rights. It's funny, they say, well, you don't give up any rights when you join the military, and that's a big pile of crap. Glenn, if you were to quit your job right now, if you decided that I'm not going to work ever, what's the absolute worst thing that can possibly happen to you as a civilian who quits their job?
Well, perhaps a civil lawsuit associated with something having to do with, privacy issues or company intellectual property and stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe if you have a contract with them, they might sue you for breach of contract. Yeah, try that in the military. You don't show up for work, you end up in jail, fed bread and water.
AWOL. People don't understand how very much different the Uniform Code of Military Justice. When you enlist, when you take a commission, you put yourself under the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
It's a little different.
Under the UCMJ, you can be guilty until proven innocent. So your civil rights are basically abrogated so that you can go in and protect other people's rights.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Correct. We, as a country, have clearly and openly violated the Nuremberg Code for quite some time. I don't know how much you've actually researched the Tuskegee experiments of untreated syphilis. But a lot of people think that the government gave these men syphilis, and that's not true, at least not to my knowledge. What I've read and what I've in my research was that they went out and they found these men who already had syphilis, and they were following them and tracking them and tracing them and seeing, how they progressed and all this kind of stuff. But, 10, 20 years into the study, it was discovered that penicillin cured syphilis.
Yeah, why? So we're right. The obvious question is, why would you not help to treat the people?
Right. Exactly. Once they discovered that, experiment should have been over. Those men should have all been treated.
Right.
But they didn't kill the experiment. They let it go on until would you say 1972?
Yes, 32 to 72.
Yeah.
So, it straddles the Nuremberg era.
Right, right. So, okay, yeah. So let's do this. So we started it in 32. We had the Nuremberg Code developed. Then we discovered that penicillin cured syphilis. Now, those two might be reversed. It might be one way or another. But either way, once one of those two things happened, whether the latter of the two, they should have been treated.
Well, for the same reason they disallowed ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine during the pandemic, and
in the Nuremberg Code, still there's a point in there, which is why they were disallowed and ridiculed of anything that was considered to be a treatment for COVID-19. That's in here too,
right? And then when you look at the history of these stacks, these vaccine stacks that are being imposed on children, and the burgeoning of autism that we're seeing with all the stacked vaccines, it's when somebody gives your kid an injection and, hours later he's autistic, whereas previously he was meeting all developmental milestones. Something's definitely right in Denmark.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to go, Glenn.
Take care.
Be back in about 3 minutes on the other side of this break. Thank you very much.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
That's right. This is the National Intel Report on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Peter Serafin, your host, and as promised, our first guest of the evening, Mr. Brent Hamacek of Human Events. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Couldn't be any better. I'm here, so I'm in a great place, right? I win.
Well, it's a great place to start. I was at your website, well, this morning, checking it out, looking at what was going on, and you've got the "I'll Never Forget What They Did to Us in the Town Where I Grew Up" by Jack Prose. I can never say his name.
Posobiec.
I always try to say it too fast, but Jack Posobiec. That's like the big article at the top of on the top of the homepage. So, what's that about?
Jack covers a lot of ground. Folks will have to read it to get a sense, but he's our star performer, big following, and you know, he hosts Human Events Daily on the Turning Point Network, and we work very closely with Turning Point and Charlie Kirk. We're proud of that. At Human Events Media Group, a lot of people still don't realize we don't just own Human Events. We also own the Post-Millennial. So, and Jack's been working closely with the Post-Millennial on breaking news stories for years, going back to even when he was with OAN. So, you know, look, we're two different platforms with two different flavors. And we like to think at Human Events that we're a little bit more, in tune to doing some serious commentary on news and then opinion pieces. Post-Millennial, known for breaking news, and they have been at the cold face of the culture war for the last 6 years. And so two really different types of platforms. I should add that Celine Siccio runs the Human Events platform for us now and just does a wonderful job. She came to us from Campus Reform, and she's been doing great things ever since she came to us in May.
Cool. It's always nice to get a fresh set of eyes in there to shake things up just a little bit.
Yes, it is. And youthful, because as you can tell from my old tired eyes, that that youth is not a virtue I any longer possess. But it's fun to be involved with the group. My contribution is occasional to the Human Events platform. I will occasionally write what I like to think is a thoughtful essay, and have contributed a number of those over time to the platform, and would certainly love it if your audience, you know, if you go to the Human Events platform and you click on my picture, you don't have to look at me anymore. And I look better when you're reading what I write, and have written some serious pieces over time.
Well, Brian, what's going on with Human Events like right now? You guys were really big into the rallies that were running around the country there for a while. Weren't you highly involved in those, or was it just you following them?
So when you say the rallies, there's been a number of them. If you're slightly more specific with me, I can help.
Honestly, there's been so many, I forget the names of them all.
We try to cover things that are going on with, you know, what I like to call the manufacturing floor of this thing that we call a movement. My background, just for your audience, is that I've had my own consulting practice for 23 years, and business consulting. And I've been working with privately owned companies, really playing David against Goliath for those 23 years. And what I've learned over time is that in business, there's often a disconnect between the C-suite, you know, the executives who get all the money and make all the decisions, and then the people who are actually down on the floor pumping out product. And the political translation to that is that in this thing that we call a movement, that is sometimes a bit more like a drunkard's walk, there are folks that are down on that manufacturing floor doing the blocking and tackling that needs to happen to push things forward. I've written quite a bit about, for example, the election integrity efforts that have gone on in the state of New Hampshire that date back to right after the 2020 election, and they continue right through yesterday, or 2 days ago, when legislation was introduced in the state, multiple pieces, to address election integrity. Those folks that have been doing the work, the blocking and tackling work on the manufacturing floor in that state, have faced setback after setback after setback. And a lot of times they can't get help from just lawyers to file motions. They can't get coverage from the media. They can't get people to really look at them. You know, and I'm not going to say Tucker Carlson's name because of Tucker. It's just a name people know. So someone of that stature, right, who's got that C-suite position within the movement, those kinds of people need to get more in touch with the people on the manufacturing floor, the people doing the real work, to do what people in C-suites do. They say, what do you need? Why do we have so much scrap? Why isn't product getting out on time? Why are the shipments late? Why is the quality down? And then tell them what they need. And those kinds of folks need to be helping those people. So we try to cover, and I try to write about things that are inside of the movement that are on that manufacturing floor to bring them to the attention of the C-suite so they can get some help.
Yeah, not even as high up on as the, you know, the chief executives there, but if you look at anything from an office, once you leave the production floor, once you're no longer hands-on in whatever the job is, and you become mid to upper level management, and you're not there every day in the middle of it, there are so many things that don't make sense on paper. You're looking at an office and you're like, well, that seems stupid. Let's get rid of that. But when if you were to actually be on the ground floor and you saw how things were happening and you know, at the manufacturing level, that stroke of a pen that you just did just made, you know, 20 people's life infinitely harder. You know, I my full-time job is a mailman. And I constantly have people in our, like, regional office in Pittsburgh that decide, hey, we don't want to deliver to this street anymore. You know, these people should never have gotten street delivery. They should have always had a P.O. box because they live in this little itty-bitty tiny town. So we're going to cut them off.
Right.
But they didn't talk to me first, the guy who actually delivers the mail. The post office won't cut off service to somebody who's getting service. So the whole idea is when this person moves out, the next person is cut off. What they didn't realize is on that street is three properties that are owned by an old folks home that are residential apartment buildings, basically, that are never going to be empty. So we're never going to be able to cut off that street. So somebody sitting in an office somewhere, stroke of a pen, just made everybody else that lives on that street angry because now they can't get mail.
Right. Well, and this is a real problem. And again, it translates perfectly into the political movement. One of the big problems we have on the team right side of things in America is that there is a disproportionate amount of emphasis and focus that's placed on elections. So everybody wants their candidate to get elected, and people with a lot of money. I had a conversation, by the way, just yesterday with a group with a ton of money and talking about some different sort of manufacturing floor initiatives. And they said, look, we're really just interested in spending money to try to impact the outcome of elections. This is the problem that we have on our side, and it's an enormous problem. We're wasting money and we're overvaluing elections.
Yeah.
Elections matter, but, you know, just think about it. You know, back in early 2017, so six short years ago, at this time, we had a brand new Republican president, House and Senate. And look where we are today. So you say, well, look at that. We had a clean sweep. We took all three houses, all three sections. What good did it do us? Did us very little. And to the extent that they did anything legislatively, it's all been undone. So, I mean, the First Step Act remains and a really, really bad tax reform act remains. That's it. And there's nothing left of that election victory. In the meantime, the other folks, well, look what they've done. They control virtually every large municipal government in the country. They control the federal bureaucracy. They control the entertainment industry. They control the mainstream media. They control the educational industry, K through college, and they control most large corporate C-suites and boardrooms. So do you think they're obsessed about elections? Well, they pay attention to them, but they see them as a part of a whole. And we tend to see them as the whole of the moon. And that's a real problem. It's a problem with how we spend money, and it's a problem with how we focus.
It is. The other side, so to speak, figured out a long time ago how valuable the local stuff is. And our side, for some reason, has ignored it for decades. And, you know, all politics is local. It believe it or not, it flows from the bottom up. Not only is the guy that you elect to city council, you know, more likely to go on to county and state level positions, but also it's the local government that can stand up and say no when the state and federal governments decide that they want to overreach. So, yeah, the other side figured that out a long time ago and took over pretty much all the local stuff. You mentioned the largest municipalities, and our side just let them. We didn't even try, really.
Right. Well, so part of it might be a little bit of a unintended consequence of cable news, and part of it might be a reflection a little bit of the fundamental difference between us. So the cable news piece, you know, it used to be in the old days, you know, when the old days, by the way, which we also call my youth, if you wanted the news, you sat down at 5:30 Central or 6:30 Eastern and whatever it was, and you watched Walter Cronkite, and that was 30 minutes, and then you were done. You either got a morning newspaper or an afternoon paper, or if you were affluent, you got both. That was your news. And a lot of that was local news, right, that you would get in the newspapers. Today, you have access to national news 24/7 from all sorts of outlets and on your handheld device all day long. So what does that do to people? Well, I think it makes local stuff boring, right? Yeah. It's, you just want to skip to the end, and the end is what's going on nationally. What's the big story, right? It's not what's going on with the local drainage commission. So I think the cable news has, unfortunately, to some extent, deglamorized and made it kind of boring and non-sexy to be involved in local politics. And the other part is this. You say, well, why wouldn't that happen to the other side too, just like us? And I think that goes back to the nature of our difference. So we tend to be individualists by nature, right? We're not really prone to want to take action. It's not what we do. We don't want to go out and pass laws and use government to do things. So we're inherently unmotivated about weaponizing the state. The other side is very motivated fundamentally by taking collective action. They want to use government as a weapon. So they'll pick up a weapon wherever they find it. It doesn't matter if it's at the federal level or the state level or in, you know, in the local town hall. So perhaps an unintended consequence of cable news, perhaps a fundamental reflection on the difference between us and our nature.
I think that's a great example of one of the fundamental differences of the sides. I often use the you know, free healthcare idea as the example to illustrate it. You know, I have nothing against free healthcare. I have, but my entire problem is with government healthcare. You want free healthcare? Fund organizations like the Shriners and St. Jude's and set up charity hospitals. The minute you get the government involved, you're giving them more control over your life. And we've all seen that, you know, especially at the federal level, government doesn't do anything effectively or efficiently.
Right. Well, you know, healthcare is such a great example. And when you hear people say that, you know, well, look, the British system works well or the Canadian system works well, one of the things people lose track of is that the British system and the Canadian system have been around now for a very long time. So when something's been around for a long time and now, you know, a couple or more generations have been living with it, their definition of what works well becomes focused on what it is they're inside of, right? So it works okay because it works the way it's supposed to, because it's what they become used to and what they were told to expect. To them, that works well. But there's a reason why world leaders all over Europe, when they get sick, they leave their country and they come here to get treated. Mm-hmm. Because we're not fully socialized just yet. We're on our way, of course, in medicine, but we're not all the way there. And to the extent we're there now, we weren't there, say, 10, 15 years ago. So it's kind of like, yeah, everything's fine because this is all I've ever seen. And so we have to be aware sometimes when they're praising their system that it's because they might just not know any better.
Yeah, Mo, they clearly, if they think it's a great system, they don't know any better because their government is openly trying to get them to commit suicide and helping them through the process. What are they called? The MAID, the assisted death. I'm like, it's crazy that a government would ever encourage their citizens to die. We got a call. Well, Sarah in Oregon, welcome to the show.
Hi. Here's the thing about the discussion, about tonight's discussion. It's not just the vaccines. It's everything. Everything from telling us to get used to people saying he, her, him, he, him, they, them. If they don't, you get fired, ostracized. Heck, even a legal injunction gets filed against you for not accepting it. It's just insane.
It's all about control.
Right. Yep. Well,
bye.
Bye, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Bye, Sarah. We saw during the pandemic not just how quickly we surrendered our liberty to government and bureaucrats and supposed experts. We saw that, but we saw something else that was even worse. We saw how quickly we were willing to turn on one another, right? So this went from the United States to East Germany virtually overnight. And our FBI is turned into the Stasi. We have neighbors phoning in neighbors. In the community where I live in the Chicago suburbs, at one point in the pandemic, a local officer said that 90% of the phone calls that were coming into the local police department were neighbor turning in neighbor. And so we really have to take a look here at our nature and what it is, not just that's being done to us. We have to take a look at what we were very quickly willing to do with each other. And this gift, this thing we were given when our nation was created and the Constitution written, we're chipping away at that, but we're beyond chipping away at it at this point, right? And so our nature's escaping, and we're finding ways to collectively take action against citizens. More importantly, we're starting to learn just how willing citizens are to take action against citizens. And so we should be afraid.
I was actually a little proud of the city of New York when...
I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, this doesn't happen often.
No.
I think it was de Blasio had set up the a text line where you could text in your COVID violation complaints and observations, like, you know, Billy Bob's not wearing a mask and he's standing too right. close to me and all this. So they set up a text line. And the text line was inundated with pictures of middle fingers and dick pics and just inappropriate messages and just like it's the only time I can remember saying out loud that I'm proud of New York City.
Right. Well, certainly the people that were willing to do that, I'd agree with you. I'd be proud of them as well. But, you know, so again, where I live in the Chicago suburbs during the pandemic, we had mayors going onto social media encouraging citizens to turn in their neighbor. And we had Facebook groups that formed where people were being encouraged, you know, if your next door neighbor's having a gathering in their backyard, take a picture and post it here. Mm-hmm. So this is what we were seeing. And we think that because the pandemic has gone away, we think, well, maybe that behavior will go away. But does behavior go away? Behavior might go away, but that might be because the opportunity doesn't exist to present it. I don't think that people changed back overnight. In fact, I think that during the pandemic, we just simply saw what people are. It gave them a chance to show it. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, the 2022 election wasn't any big surprise, at least not to me, and why I wrote about it that way. Because there wasn't, everybody was thinking, well, look at what's happened in the last couple of years. Certainly people are going to rebel against this. And my thought was, why would they? It's been well over 100 years in the making. This is next just part of a progression. So why would people suddenly abandon it? So collectivism is here to stay. The battle's going to be long. And none of this is going to turn around anytime soon.
That's exactly what our problem is. It's individualism. Which, you know, the foundation of our country, the first and only nation ever founded on the concept of individualism versus collectivism, which is basically everybody else in the world.
That's exactly right. Those are the terms I use. So I have to say it's exactly right, or I'd be disagreeing with myself. That's not good. I'd be in inner conflict and turmoil.
All right, Brent, before we let you go, I want to make sure you have a chance to plug all your stuff. So we got humanevents.com and...
All right. Yeah, there's a bunch of ands. So first of all, I'd like to plug, if you will, the book that I co-wrote with the late Dr. Vladimir Zelenko that is out. It's called Zelenko, How to Decapitate the Serpent. Zev loves snakes and serpents. And that book can be found at zelenkobook.com. And if you purchase a copy, you will be benefiting then. The next thing I'll plug, which is the Zelenko Freedom Foundation, because I have assigned the copyright to the book and all my royalties in the book to the foundation. So every dime goes to Zev's foundation to carry on his work, his message, and preserve his legacy. So ZelenkoBook.com, it's also available at Amazon. Amazon didn't take it down. I get asked all the time. They've been very, very good to us, and so we appreciate that. And then the Zelenko Foundation, where I happen to be a board member, is doing great work. Kevin Phillips and Ann Vandersteel are the co-chair people of the foundation, just two real absolute warriors in the medical freedom movement. And so support the foundation, buy the book. And then the last thing I'll plug is a program that put together with my dear friend and partner, Felisa Blazek, called Common Ground Campus. You can see it in the banner behind me. And Common Ground Campus is something we've done now at several schools. We've got a bunch coming up in the spring. What we do is we go onto a college or high school campus, and we have the students tell us what issues are divisive on their campus. We get a couple of kids from each side of that issue, and we sit down and we do not debate the issue. We have kids articulate what they think the problems are, have the other side ask them questions. We go back and forth, and we find a way to find common ground on those issues that students on both sides, upon which they can both agree. And then we have a pizza party afterwards. So these are
that
the kind of things.
That sounds awesome.
It is awesome. And your audience, if they went to commongroundcampus.com and took a look at what we were doing, you know, I'd really appreciate that. And it's a funded initiative, and we're always looking for additional funding, so you can help us either by finding a school or finding your wallet or somebody else's wallet. That's even better. But if we're going to fight for the country, we have to know who we're fighting against or pushing against, and we also have to know who we have to attract or who we have to pull in. So there's a push and a pull to this. Most people focus on one or the other, and my great mission and my later golden years here is to try to focus on both. So I'm involved in the push. That's why I wrote Zev's book with him. And I'm involved in the pull. And that's what Common Ground Campus is all about. So also like to mention, I do a weekly show with my dear friend Tamara Lee called Trend On. And that we do that on Rumble, and it's a lot of fun. And everybody loves Tamara, so she gets great guests. And you can follow us there. So there are all the places you can find me if anybody's desperate enough to look.
Well, thank you very much. You can also find you back here once a month. We appreciate your commitment to do that. And when you come to Penn State for Common Ground Campus, I only live like 8 miles away. I'd love to be involved when you get to Penn State to do that.
Well, here's your mission between this month and next one. I see you again. See if you can help us open a door at Penn State, and we'll give you a front row seat.
I don't know about 1 month. It might take me a little bit. That's a big organization.
You can take your time.
You can also help the Zelenko Freedom Foundation by going to zstacklife.com. And remember to use the code LIGHTHOUSE, and that helps me out as well as helping out the Zelenko Freedom Foundation. zstacklife.com, code LIGHTHOUSE. I used Zelenko's protocol when I had COVID. I went up on his website and pulled it up, and then when my 84-year-old grandmother got sick with COVID, I took it to her. Nobel Prize
let me,
for it.
Let me share a live in the moment story with you about the Zelenko protocol. Here's what people don't talk about enough, but I'm going to talk about it right now. So your audience probably can't tell that I have a very, very slight cold. It's day two of a cold. That's when they start to get worse. I actually felt worse last night than I do today, because yesterday when I started to get that cold, I tripled in three times in a day instead of twice my intake of quercetin, zinc, and vitamin C. And so instead of my cold getting worse from the start, it got better, and now it's essentially gone. This is, wait for it, the sixth time I've started to get a cold in the last 2 years. All six of them died in the crib. So I take the Zelenko protocol of quercetin and zinc and vitamin C every single day. And when I start to get a virus, because you do, I increase that dosage. And what happens? Here I am. I haven't sneezed once during your show, and I think I'm probably pretty clear sounding. And I owe that to my late friend. The protocol kills the coronavirus in the cell while it's developing and multiplying. That's why it's effective. And so, you know, this disease was always treatable. We make a great case for it in the book. Urge your audience to buy the book. I'm told it's a very good read. I'm not allowed to say that because I wrote it, but the comments have been very kind and flattering. So buy the book, buy one for a friend, and buy one for your local library and donate it.
Well, Dr. Zelenko, I was in the process of working on having him come on the show as a guest right when he turned ill. So I didn't have that privilege, but I've seen him do a lot of interviews, and he was a very interesting and energetic man, and surely going to be missed. But
yes, he will.
Thank you very much, Brent. The time is up. We've got to go to our commercial break. So check out Brent Hamachek's stuff and check him out next month when he comes back here. After this break, when we come back, we got Dave Summerall. So 3 minutes. See you then.
Take America back. We must take America back.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.